I want to thank you for those nice words. Now I wish my wife was here. I met Kathy in AA about 24 years ago. We got married and we have 6 children. 7 years. Something to be said about being compulsive, I suppose. But I liked it. My oldest daughter, she's in the program. On Thanksgiving dinner, she came over and telling my wife that she had tickets to see Ken Rogers and Dolly Parton. Because I have a choice, I told my wife she has a choice, either me or Ken Rogers. That's why I'm alone tonight. But I'm the one they call John the Indian. And I like that. I've heard a lot this weekend. I think that among other things that I learned to enjoy in the program is to be able to see myself in other people, to identify and to understand. I enjoyed my friend Jack Friday night, last night. I don't know if you identify the story told about... I think you understood rather than identifying the story told about that 85-year-old man. I don't think you're old enough to identify with that, but not only you understood it, but I think you liked it. I know I did too. I have a friend at home. He's the type of fellow who shares everything, and the other night he was talking about his first sex experience. Said he liked it. He was at home, and he was alone. I don't know if you identify with that. I think it's a wonderful thing to be able to look back in your own life and to realize just how grateful you are. Somebody mentioned about time that some of us don't like in AA. Time is reality. And it's God's way of telling us that not everything happens all at once. But time is a beautiful thing because in AA you do learn from your friends. You get some insight about yourself. You get some understanding about the illness of alcoholism. You learn something about prayer. And I have been fortunate enough that I have been given time in AA to learn all these things. And when I look back tonight, I realize that I'm a lucky person. I have a lot to be grateful for. There have been some special people in my life I know that who took time to help me those days when I really needed help and I didn't know how to receive it. One of them was a lawyer. I met him back in 1957. I was in a mission that night because I lived in Skid Row for almost 8 years. I was sober, and a mom came to see me in the mission, and he asked me if I wanted to go to an AA meeting. And I didn't know what an AA meeting was, and I didn't want to go anyplace because I wasn't dressed, and I needed a haircut. And I have always suffered from Lyme sores, and that usually took me about 6 weeks before my face would clear up. And when I'm in this condition, I don't want anyone to see me. So I didn't want to come to AA. He said, well, you know, they have coffee and donuts, and they're free. So I said, "You'll go." I walked into the central group. Central group is meeting like this one. Mixed people from different walks of life. The man who stood at the door that night was a lawyer. And that's what he did every Friday night. He stood at the door and he would shake hands to everyone who came to that meeting. And he would do the same thing after the meeting. He would shake hands to everyone who was leaving. And as I was walking through the doors of AA, he grabbed my hand and he says to me that he was glad to see me. And I wasn't glad to see him at all. Because the only thing I could see was the way I looked, the way I felt. And I sat down, and my first teacher in AA was a lady judge. And I never even knew judge strength. The ones it isn't that I never met one of them before. I met one 43 times. And he never once asked me to try to identify. And she got my mind all screwed up. And all I want to do is get my donut and get the hell out of there. But there was this lawyer. And that's what I'm grateful for. I'm grateful that he understood. Because when you're a bum, and when you have long hair and wine sores, you know, you don't look too well. Not too many people put his arms around you, even people in AA. Maybe because it's human nature. Years later, going to step meetings, one day I was listening to someone reading the 11th step of prayer of St. Francis, and he was saying, "Lord, I pray that I may understand rather than to be understood." Every time I hear that, I remember the lawyer. I guess that's what the kind of a person who will put arms to a bum is, a person who has that understanding. Of course, I didn't know anything about it. I was leaving because I didn't belong there. And as I was leaving, he stopped me and he said, "You know, before you leave, why don't you meet some of my friends?" And I think that touched me, and I think that listening to different speakers this weekend, it seems that God works the way it works. It seems that we're all different and that he touched us in the way that he does. What touched me was that I felt I was wanted here. And people really took interest in me. I liked it. And that's what allowed me to come back. And I needed to come back. I needed to learn what I had learned in those years in the program. Because like someone was saying, I never knew that I was a sick person. And people that I have met, those 7 years that I drank, nobody ever said, "John, you know, you're sick." They said other things. Like the judge one time, I was facing a judge one time, he said, "John," now he calls me John, "that's the man I met 43 times." He wasn't a friend, but he calls me John. He says, "The biggest park in the city of Syracuse, where you picked up last night, that's for the decent people to go there on Sundays. It's not for people like you." And because the way I felt about myself, I believed that. And one of the things I'm grateful for is I don't feel the way about that, about myself tonight. I really enjoy being here. I feel kind of proud that I can stand up here and share my life. Or maybe I feel grateful. I don't particularly like the idea of traveling on a jet. I've been having problems lately. I was on a jet not too long ago, and the captain said, I don't want to discourage anyone, but we lost one engine. I said, I'm discouraged. You shouldn't have told me that. The next trip I took, we got hit by the thunder or something. You know, and every time anything happens, you know, I start saying, God grant me the serenity. And the captain came over and looked at the wing and said, I guess we're all right. Well, I wasn't. Not at all. Then I was going to Alaska. Somebody invited me to go to Alaska. In Chicago, I spent 5 hours because they find out the generator, something happened to the generator that's supposed to keep this motor going. This weekend, I'm in Minneapolis 1 hour going around up there. And all I could think about was my chick would say down home, just carrying the message, sucks. But I'm glad I'm here. I want to thank you for that fruit basket you've given me and wonderful dinner that didn't cost me anything tonight. Tasted good. I got a king-size bed that I really don't need all of it. So if anybody looking for a bed, it's free. We can sit down and talk about what it used to be like. What happened? And what it's like today. As you probably know by now, I'm a Canadian. I was brought up in a small little reservation in Canada. And like so many of us, my father liked to drink. When he died, our family got sick. We lost 8 members in my family in 5 years. All my family died with TB. My mother died with TB too when I was 13. And I share this because I had a lot of fears in life. I had, people, alcoholics sometimes talk about wanting to commit suicide. It never entered in my mind. I was always afraid in those days that I was going to die. I felt I was treated like if I had TB. And one of the things I've learned in my recovery that I have a tendency of suffering from what you people call an obsession. A fear to me, it got something to me. And I couldn't forget. I mean, I couldn't sleep. I was sleeping with my mother, and I asked her one morning if I was going to die. And, you know, she was dying, but I thought I was too. And she said that I was very strong and that I was different. She should have never said that. And she was very proud of me. And when my mother died, I didn't look for a home because I felt I wasn't wanted, so I lived in an all-empty house for about a year. You learn a lot in recovery. And inside is healthy. And God make us that way. I learned that I'm the type of person who seeks rejection. And that's a hard thing to overcome. And it goes back even in my own home with my own people. I can understand when people said I felt alone. I did too. But it wasn't because of my people. I choose to live in this old empty house with a dog, and I couldn't sleep. I had a lot of problems. I discovered when I was about 14 years old that if I started to pretend that I'm somebody else, I could find some comfort and I could fall asleep. So I have taught myself as the years went by to pretend that I am somewhere else, that I lived in a big house and that I have a lot of nice clothes and money and a big car and a nice girl. Hell, if you're going to dream, it doesn't cost any more to pile it up. I learned to relax. I was 14 years old. You know, it's really worse kind of a sickness when you start denying yourself from who you are. In a time in my life when I didn't even did anything bad, I have done nothing to be ashamed of, nothing to feel guilty about. I had all those things that I brought into a program. I think that's why when Bill Wilson wrote the step, he knew from where he said this Indian, all screwed up. He needs to sit down one day and take his own inventory. He needs to find someone for once in his life and tell the truth about who he is. Maybe if I can do that, I would stop wishing that I should be somebody else. I bring this up because if you knew and if you don't know, escape is comfort, but escape is denying yourself from who you are. Denying yourself from who you are, you never grow. You can't get any place. But God didn't make you for you to deny yourself. God made you for you to have strength to make a decision and to have choice. And to be effective, to be proud of yourself, to trust yourself, to be able to love, to be able to be grateful. So many things that we can do. I know nothing about it. My people worked in lumber camps in Maine. So I left home when I was 14 and I arrived in Patton, Maine, and I wanted a job in the woods, but the fellow said I was too skinny, too young, and it was against the law to hire kids. He said the CC camp was 20-some miles in the woods and then needed a dishwasher because the Army, the Second World War, a lot of people were joining the Army and they needed help. So I walked and I arrived there and I met a man by the name of Bill Langster. He gave me a job and I was with him for 4 years. When I was 18 years old, some people suggested that I should join the younger people, that I needed to be with the younger people. Well, I thought that I would join the Army, then go back to my home and show my people that now I'm a soldier, that I have grown. What I didn't know was that if you cannot read and write in the Canadian Army, you're not allowed to go on training. I joined the Canadian Infantry in Quebec City, of all the places, all the French, and I don't talk French. And they gave me a job washing dishes. Now, I don't mind washing dishes in lumber camp. But in the Army, it told me that I wasn't as good as the next person. That's one of my problems for so many years. What is it in our recovery, the second step? of all places. Second step talks about believing. He identifies faith as the spirit of independence. Bill Wilson said, "A person without faith is one who seeks approval. You live on what other people think about you. You will go as far as to tell lies about yourself just to be accepted." Boy, could I identify with that. Faith, he said, is the spirit of independence. You know, when I was sober 5 years, I was still in skids, and I was sleeping in a men's room in a hotel in Marlboro. I just arrived there 1 o'clock in the morning. I was 33 years old by this time. And if you came to me that night and said, "John, what is your problem?" At the age of 33, 5 years sober, well, I would tell you, you know, I'm an Indian. And you know, if you have a problem with Indian, you got one. Because you're going to be one the rest of your life. Second thing is, you know, I can't read and write. I'm just an unfortunate person. I never had a break. Bill Wilson said, "One who rationalizes and testifies, the list is long." If I had a nice girl, and if I have a nice home, and a nice car, and my new set of teeth, because by that time I lost 4 of them. I met one that I couldn't communicate too well with. And if I had money, if I had all these things, I wouldn't feel the way I do. You know, the amazing thing is when you have that type of sickness, night after night you sit next to a person who has a home, who has a nice wife, who has money, who has a nice clothes, who has a nice car. What you don't know is that you both feel the same way. His rationalization is different. He probably says, "That bitch I live with." Anyone living with that bitch would feel the way I do. Or it's the boss. They don't care how hard I work. But I never could see it. You imagine if someone came to me when I first came to AA and said, "John, you stay sober, and one day you will receive a call from Omaha, Nebraska." They're going to pay you expenses. You'll have a king-size bed. They will take you out. But most of all, you can stand up there and you wouldn't be ashamed because you don't have an education. Or because you don't talk in English. Can you imagine if someone came to me that night and said, "John, one day you live in a 14-room house?" Not too long ago, I bought my wife a Chrysler. 5th Avenue. Not 4th, 5th Avenue. $18,000. My wife is finding a job. You know, she's like me. She doesn't have a talent. So she's got a job. She gets paid $4.50 an hour. It tickles me to think that she arrives with $18,000 automobile. The army was very difficult for me. Because I'm truly an obsessed person. Washing dishes for me was an obsession. I told lies about it. Because you couldn't tell a girl, you know, you're washing dishes. Why couldn't you? If you believe the truth, it's more honorable than lie. If you believe that the truth doesn't disarm you from being a great person. But I think just backwards. I wouldn't go home to my people because I didn't want them to know. See, I lost the brother in war. And I didn't want anybody to know that I was washing dishes. So I told lies about it. What I really wanted was a drink. But I wouldn't drink because you heard it in AA. I didn't want to be like my father. So I didn't drink until I was 21 years old. I was with a fella. We come around together a long time. He was a farmer. Lady is a farmer. Only this guy wasn't a farmer. He wanted to be one. I mean, that's all he talked about. Every time we go out, we talk. One time, him and I decided, we were 18 years old, so we decided, someone said, that in St. Lawrence Street in Montreal, you can go over there if you have money and pick the girl that you like. And have fun. So we saved our money, and we got all dressed up, so we looked good. In case they wouldn't like us, you know. So we went over to St. Lawrence Street, where you can pick the girls, and we stood there. And we stood. And we stood longer than most girls did. That's the kind we were. We were trying to convince each other which one should go and ask. Finally, he did, and he came back. He was all upset. And he said, John, you wouldn't believe. I said, what? He said, she wants $25. I said, what's wrong? We got a lot of money. He said, John, you don't understand. He said, down home, you can buy a cow for $25. Now, that's a farmer, right? That's an obsession. We got our discharge, and he says to me, what do you say we buy suits and we'll have a few drinks and we'll meet some girls? And I thought it was a good idea. So he brought us, we went to Bluery Cafe in Montreal, and the third floor you walk in, and four-piece orchestra playing, and in front there was a girl singing, practically, with no clothes on. And I think that's where I received my first spiritual experience. But then I took a drink. I like drinking. I really don't understand too much about drinking. Some people tell us we drink for the effect. I suppose we do. But I needed a drink. Well, I like drinking because... Well, for one thing, I can get close to people. And I'm not even today... I realize the value of being able to be open and share your life. But to me, it's a very slow process in life. I'm sure I'm much better than what I used to be. But I enjoy drinking because I can get very close to people. I enjoy not being afraid what people might think about me. I suppose it was some kind of a freedom that I have never had. I like that. But the other part I like too is I like to be crazy. I enjoy being able to be crazy. I can't do that sober because I'm so sensitive of being intelligent. And I can't stand anyone who is stupid. Or ignorant, it bothers me. But that's not what really bothers me. What bothers me is I have trouble with what St. Francis talked about, what the lawyer had. I have trouble saying, Lord, I pray that I may understand rather than to be understood, or that I accept rather than control. When you control, you destroy a relationship. When you accept, you put it together. But you control with intellect. But relationship is spiritual. It's not intellectual. It is not a question you're right or wrong. Question is, in this life there is something greater than what is right and what is wrong. And that is the ability to be able to accept. You know that lawyer, it is so important. That lawyer who put his arms around me when I myself didn't know I belonged here. It was enough to bring me back. Another thing I like about drinking, because I can accept that I'm crazy, I suppose. I like falling in love every night. You know, I look at this girl and she's the most beautiful thing you've ever seen. You think? She is. But not necessarily so, because alcohol also affects your vision. You know, you wake up in the morning and you say, holy Christ. You were so cute last night. But you know, you take a drink and you love all over again. And I love that. I love to be that crazy. I love fight. I love fight. Because I get bored. I can be in a bar room drinking, and I look around and I'm bored. And I'll spot someone that I don't like the way he looks. A few more drinks and I will approach him. I don't like you. Johnny says, I don't want any problem. I said, it's too damn bad you don't get it anyway. I love that. And then they would call a cop. And everybody thinks that's when I'm supposed to leave. But then that's when gets the fun starts. This guy just opens the door for me. This cop is going to find out who they're dealing with. And when they get to know you, they come three or four. That's even better. And it's fun. Even in the court, it's fun. I remember one morning I was in the court, and this big fat policeman came over and he held his pants. The leg was missing. Everybody in the court laughed. Judge laughed, so I laughed too. It was fun. Until he gave me 6 months. Then it wasn't fun anymore. Everybody was laughing but me. But alcoholism, it gets worse. And the day comes when you don't fall in love every night anymore. No more fight. You don't get close to people anymore. It doesn't do anything. And you can't stop. I knew I couldn't stop. I also knew it was first drink. I have known that for years. But I never knew that I was powerless over one drink. And I didn't know I was an alcoholic. But I've always known that once I took a drink, I never stopped. When I was asked to come here, I know it was probably one of many important days in my life. But I came here because I was hungry. I needed a donut, free coffee. I came back. The second important person I met was my sponsor, Pat. Now, I knew Pat. I never liked Pat. He was a bum longer than I am. He had a degree. I used to say, there is nothing worse than a bum with a degree. Unbeknown to us then, periodically, Pat would disappear from the skids. Sometimes 6 months he would be gone. And he joined AA. When I met Pat, I was in Central Group one night. He walked in all dressed up. And he comes to me and he said, "John, I'm your sponsor." Said, "I have a new car outside." And he used to pick me up every night and used to bring me to a meeting. And sometimes he would bring me a sandwich. He used to say he can only eat half of it. And I don't know what's going on, you know. Because I think sometimes we're so into ourselves, it's like a one big obsession, that we really don't see what's going on. I never really cared that Pat picked me up every night. It was years later when someone once said, "You ever stop and think that Pat never eats sandwiches?" And someday, if you're lucky enough, you stand up here and you brag about $18,000 Chrysler. Nice hotel room. Feeling good about yourself. To be able to learn and identify with the speaker. To be able to tell a joke and laugh. But it's so important to realize where does it come from. It is so real to know that there have been people in my life who took time to help me when I didn't even know that I needed help. When there was no gratitude in my life, there is no question that there is such thing what St. Francis talks about. That you and I are very, very capable of understanding rather than wanting to be understood. But we are very capable of buying a sandwich. Bring it to a person who doesn't even know that he needs help. That is a very healthy state of mind to walk with in this world of ours. We gotta get away from ourselves. Among other things that St. Francis said, for it is in self-forgetting that you find. I stopped at noontime meeting, Thanksgiving. It's the trotting center, and people come over there and they bring turkey. They had a meeting center for it, and there was this big guy sitting there, weighs 200 or so. He was sad. He said, "I just been to my father and my mother. I went there today," he said. "I had all the intentions to hug my father. We have not done that," he said, "since I can remember. I wasn't sure I could hug my father," he said. "But I was pretty sure that I could hug my mother. But I said, I just couldn't do it." And I was sitting there. And I can identify with that. I don't know what it's worth when you have father and mother that you cannot hug. Or when you don't have them. But we all have a past that we have to live with. Some lady said today, if you are a parent, when you go home, you make a point that you tell your daughters and sons that you love them. But I see an awful lot of sons and daughters sitting here. What about you when you go home and tell your father and mother that you love them? What the hell do you think? Is one sided? Six children. I call them an Indian hug. I give them an Indian hug. They bring somebody home. He says, "Daddy, give her an Indian hug." Once I gave them a hug, they don't want it anymore. Because I squeeze them today. Yes, love is important. But you don't have to be perfect to be able to love. But you do. You need to be sober 6 months to be able to love. You have to get well first. You have to be right first. St. Francis said, you're born with gifts that God gave you. You have right to choose if you wish to love. That is, you're right. And if you want love, you love. I remember when I first got married, you know, I was 35 years old, and you know, I never had a relationship. I never lived with anyone. I wasn't in no condition. Where are you going to bring a girl when you live in shit? I didn't even have a chance to have trouble with somebody else's wife. You know, I was speaking with Al-Anon, and I don't say anything with Al-Anon, I loved him, but it was an Al-Anon anniversary, and this lady, Al-Anon speaker, she keeps saying, I never woke up with strange men. She said it two or three times, I thought she was complaining. I get up and I said, I've always woke up with strange women. And I liked it. It could have been somebody else that I wouldn't like it. You know, my sponsor, he had a habit of not being there on time. And that used to burn me. 15 minutes late, and I would be so mad I wouldn't go with him. I walk. I mean, it's not easy to help a person like him. I didn't know I was perfectionist. I was 40 years old when I discovered I was perfectionist. I mean, if you see me laying in a sidewalk with long hair, wine stores, and dirty, would you say, this guy's perfectionist? He's a perfectionist. When someone once told me I was perfectionist, I was glad it sounded so. I never thought how much problem it got me. Years later, you know, my sponsor took a drink, and he died. Called me up one time. He was in Buffalo, New York. John says, I'm in trouble. I drank. So I said to my wife, you know, the man helped me an awful lot. I'm going to see if I can find him. I found him. I was living in Marlboro, Mass at the time. And, you know, by this time I had tired and I was doing all right. And he says to me, John, I almost died. That damn stuff almost killed me, he said. So I brought him to Syracuse because he wanted to go over there. He took a drink in Syracuse and he died in West Street. This is where him and I used to exchange clothes. When somebody called me up one night and he said, you know, Pat died. All I could think of was what he told me a few months ago when he said, John, the damn thing almost killed me. But he taught me something, Pat. You know, I guess what he taught me was that someday this Indian wouldn't be a bum anymore. And someday I live in a 14-room house and I'll have a car and price I even pay taxes. And it's not easy when you know that this country was ours before it was yours. Someday when I have all these things, there'll be maybe someone come to see me. As you know, it's quite a thing to be able to be invited. It feels good when your opinion is honored from your fellow man, knowing that something you cannot buy, that it is not something that somebody gives you. It's not a gift. But it's something that you have decided to choose in your own life. People will honor your opinion if you honor your own. Beautiful thing. Someday, instead of being the bum looking for help, there's always another one. Comes along and said, "John, you think you could help me?" And all you can think about is that sponsor. Somebody who taught you the value of love. Someone who stopped the car and buy a sandwich for a bum who lives in a mission. Pick him up every night when he's not even grateful. When he's mad because you're late. One day when you learn to get well, you learn to put pieces together. And the value is that one day you share the same thing to another person. You know. To pass it on. And to some extent I do that. I never do anything well. But I go along. When I arrived in Marlboro, Mass., I was 5 years sober and I was in shit. I met another important person in my life. I don't want to share this and I think it's late. He says, "John, there's a new meeting starting in, it started in Worcester a week or so ago. Would you like to go?" And I said, "Sure." And that was a step meeting. Now, I knew there were steps. In Syracuse, New York, every meeting, there would read the steps and traditions and six chapters. And if you have any mind at all, you can memorize these things. And I knew what this chapter said. These are the steps we took, which are suggested as a program of recovery. But they had no step meetings in Syracuse, New York, back in 67. There were no step meetings. And there were none in Massachusetts. They started this one. Father Fred, who was a good friend of mine, who's still alive. Eddie B, who was sober, he's a newspaper reporter, sober about 40 years. There were a lot of people who knew something about what this was all about. And I walked in there, and what they did was the pages of the steps, like 6-7 pages, and that's the first time I've heard about a recovery. And then you have these people who would express their ideas, their insights as to what step means to them. And of course, I was confused. I had never heard him before. I certainly didn't believe that night that I need this program to recovery. I really believe what I told you, if I have a car and a girl and a home and a job and money, that I would be all right. But after all, you know, second step talks about coming to believe that there is a power greater than ourselves. You know, of course, if you believe, maybe you wouldn't look for approval. If you believe something, maybe you will learn that what you want cannot get from the outside. That no matter how much person loves you, he cannot give you. God didn't make you that cheap. God gave you a choice. Right for you to be able to choose for your life. And if you don't choose, you know. But it seems to me, from the time I could remember, at the age of 13, sleeping between two mattresses, my greatest desire was to be somebody else. And I find comfort pretending that I'm somebody else. I could actually fall asleep. Faith, I have never found faith that something very comfortable. I do understand today, while maybe it is true that faith is not that comfortable, it is the magic that allows you to go from where you are with what you have in life. I was not capable of doing that when I was 13, when I was 20, when I was, my better judgment was, I needed people in AA. I needed the moral support. I needed the understanding. I needed to learn how to pray. I needed to learn how to believe. I needed all those things, and with that, it has been 29 years for me, and I'm just slowly growing every day. Sometimes I walk when I don't feel good. I walk into my house, I looked around with my kids, and you know what I said? You're a bunch of assholes. You know why I know that? Because I am one myself. It's beautiful when you know that nobody is perfect. It's even beautiful to know that's the way God made us. We born and die imperfect. But who says you have to be perfect to be able to love? Who says you have to be perfect for that magic that lawyer has to be able to understand? Who says you have to be perfect to do what St. Francis said? For it is in self-forgetting that you find. It is a person who tries to be perfect never goes any place. It is also a person never finds too much happiness, because there is a certain amount of happiness comes from imperfection. Believe it or not. You know, if you make a mistake, if you hurt someone, say you're sorry. If you do that, you find freedom. More important, you develop a trust and respect. You never get that by trying to be perfect, but you get that by dealing with imperfection. I never understand what life is all about. Paul owned a restaurant. I used to go over there. Rita, she was a waitress, she said, "John, can you paint a house?" I said, "Sure." You know, when I was drinking, I used to paint steeples in the church. God, they couldn't get anyone sick enough to, you know, get that high. I was high anyway. Anyway, she said, "Would you come over and give me an estimate in my house?" And I did. I gave her an estimate of $300, and I got my first job. But I was sleeping in a men's room in a hotel, and I said to Paul, "Well, I got a job, but I don't have any money." He said, "Paul says, why don't you go back and ask Rita? She gave me $100. So, well, I figured now that I'm president in my own company, I should buy white coveralls. Bought some paint, brought everything to a job. I went to a meeting Saturday night, and a fellow by the name of Joe, who worked in the telephone company, someone said, ask him, he's got a lot of ladders. I asked Joe if he could loan me a ladder. He said, if you don't tell anyone, it's against the rules. He said, pick it up. I said, I don't have a car. He said, I'll deliver it. I finished paying the house, and I owed Paul $65 for the grocery. I met a plumber in AA. He said, "John, I'm told you're painting houses." I said, "Sure. 7 miles from here, all you need is a step ladder." So I bought a step ladder, and I got all my drop cloths together, and then I stood in the corner, and I stopped the bus. And this guy, he looked at me, and he looked at my ladder. He said, "You're not serious." I said, "I am. I'm self-employed, and I have no other means of getting to work." He said to me, and he was a little bit soft himself, I guess. He said, "If I give you a ride, would you promise you'll never do it again?" Next, I was a school teacher. She taught school 40 years, and she retired. There were 69 questions you have to pass, so I asked her if she would help me to memorize them. And a couple of months later, I knew the questions inside out, and I went over and took the test in Marlboro. They put you in a little room. And this guy, he only asked me 2 questions. And I was insulted. I didn't want to leave. I said to myself, what the hell is used to have all these education? Nobody cares. Nobody cares. But here I am in my 5th year of sobriety, president in my own company. I have a driving license, and Paul, who owned the restaurant, he came with 11 passenger station wagon, big black station wagon with seats in the back. Said, "They want $750, John, it's yours." So I had no money, but I was painting the house, and I asked the lady, I think it was $250 down payment. Paul said I could. And a girl who belongs to Saturday Night Group, she co-signed for me, and here I was in my 6 years sobriety, residence in my own company. I had a driving license and 11 passenger station wagon. So I decided to find me a girlfriend. But I had 4 teeth missing. And I felt you couldn't find the type of a girl that I was looking for with 4 teeth missing. That's why I lost my teeth fitted. Smitty's in Syracuse, that's where all the New York Indians drink. I'm a Mi'kmaq Indian. I don't drink in Smitty's because Mi'kmaq Indians and New York Indians don't communicate too well. Every once in a while, 20 of us Mi'kmaqs would get drunk and we go to Smitty's. And we would communicate. One day I was walking by Smitty's and you told Smiley. Smiley was my friend. He had one long little Irishman with a degree. I picked him up and I said, "What's the matter?" He said, "Those Indians." I said, "Well, they can't treat you like that." He said, "No, they can't." I said to him, "What do you say you and I go in there and we'll clean them up? Did you ever feel like that when you're drunk?" We went in there and Smiley said to me, "John, it's a good idea." Well, by the Jesus, it wasn't a good idea. That's where I left my 4 teeth. And Smiley, not even a scratch, he's so damn skinny they wouldn't hit him. And they almost killed me. So I had this 4 teeth missing, and someone said there is a new dentist in AA. So I looked him up, found him, and I kind of examined him for 2-3 weeks because I don't like pain. So I said to myself, he's the type of person who would never hurt no one. And that's one among many mistakes I made in my sobriety. But he gave me his card, and a few months later, I had to see. Then I met Mary in AA, a woman by the name of Mary. She said, "John, I'm told you have a car." I said, 11 passengers. She said, "I run the home of an alcoholic woman. I have 9 girls. I'm looking for someone to bring these girls to a meeting. Would you like the job?" I said, "I'll be very happy to." That's where I met Kathy. On our way from meeting, I said to her, "Would you like to go out on date?" And she said, "No." You know, she didn't even think. It was a total rejection. And I was hurt. Because I don't like rejection. And I don't like pain. I'm a sensitive person. I get hurt easily. And I don't suffer well. On my way home, I said to myself, "Who in the hell do you think she is? You see, she has nothing. And here I am, I'm president in my own company. I have no teeth. Riding around with 11 passengers station wagon. Who the hell wants it anyway?" Thursday night comes along and picks the girls again, and on our way back, I said to her, "Would you like to go to show in Boston?" She said, "Yes." And we did, and on our way back, I asked her to marry me. She said, "But I don't know you." I said, "It's all right. We still have 5 miles to go. We'll get a train." That was before, in those days, of course, these days, I don't know, people in my area, you know what they tell the new people? Don't have a relationship for years. I don't know what they're going to tell you at the end of the year. The shorter 1 year, now maybe get laid or something. I just want you to know that that's not what Bill Wilson says. Bill Wilson says, you and I have a terrible primate relationship. Three reasons. Number one, we're self-willed in extreme. A self-willed person is a person who don't share, a person who controls. You don't have relationship controlling. Let me set St. Francis talks about. Understand and accept rather than control. Bill Wilson said an alcoholic is self-centered in extreme. His greatest desire is to be a central attraction. He says he's grandiose. But he said, if you have taken first 5 steps in AA, Bill Wilson said, you have opened the door to a relationship. You haven't learned how to have one yet. But you have opened the door. If you don't understand sitting there, if you are new, then it's your damn fault. The R-step meeting, it is your life. And I'm not saying, I'm saying I was sitting there in my 5th year of sobriety. And I didn't understand one word what AA was all about. I remember, you know, Kathy and I were married for a little while. You know, 5th year, you don't discover any wrongs. All you could think about is bed. You don't see that person has wrongs. But Kathy doesn't have any more wrongs than I do. But about a year later, we had one child or something I discovered on Wednesday. Kathy would like to wash clothes. Like Italians like spaghetti. She likes, well, they do. One of my daughters married one of them. She likes spaghetti. She washed clothes and then put them in the little bundles and she got them all over the place. Now, you must realize I'm a professional. Well, I come home one day and I see these clothes all over the place. Well, I'm sober 5, 6 years, so I'm not going to blow my top. I'm going to sit down and talk to her. I said, honey, these clothes drive me crazy. Next time, would you put them in the other room? We got 5 rooms now. I figured, what the hell, we both like each other. All you have to do is explain something. You identify with that? Just explain it intelligently. Until next Wednesday when he came along. I walk in there and there's the clothes all over the place. Now, I never explain anything twice. A person's lucky I explain it once. My reaction is, didn't get the message, huh? So I scream. And I swear, and I take this clothes and I throw them all over the place. And I rationalize by saying, if she didn't understand me the last time, she'll understand me this time. You must remember, a person who cannot accept another person is a person who has to be intellectually rationalized the problem and saying, hey kid, I am wrong and you're right, I am right and you're wrong. I am right and you're wrong, and that's the way it is. And you get more divorces that way. So I figured, well, now that I blew my top, next Wednesday, you don't see those clothes there. You kidding? You know, it got so bad on Wednesday, I see clothes before I got in there. Now, I travel with Father Fred. And I'm sober lying in me, so I don't ask for your advice. You know, when you're sober lying to anybody else, you don't ask advice. But I do mention it. And he gave me one of the most stupid answers. I said to myself, through a priest, he's very stupid. You know what he said? Why don't you help him? Me? Painting the house 14 hours and come home and help somebody to put a clothes away? You gotta be kidding. You see, what I really believe is that you can earn love. St. Francis said, you cannot earn love. St. Francis said, you pray to love rather than to seek love. Whether you work 14 hours, whether you're rich, or you pay for everything, whether you're tired of love, don't change to fit your own convenience. And if you have a problem with relationships, the longer that you point your finger to your friend, the longer you're going to have a problem with relationships. Yeah. 3 months later, Kathy and I got married. We had $85. I said to her, would you like to go on a honeymoon? We went on a honeymoon, we came back with $35. We moved into a 3-4 room apartment, we paid $13.50. We had absolutely nothing. Nobody showed up in our wedding. Only 6 people. We had no furniture, no bed, this lady was talking today, no blankets, nothing, just the 2 of us. And the coffee table that people who run the safe house, the man used to make furniture, so we got a coffee table. Kathy said to me, where are we going to sleep? I said, we'll sleep on the floor. What the hell, I've been around long enough to know that you can have fun on the floor. I said that one time in a meeting, and this lady came to me after the meeting, and she said, young man, I don't know how much fun you can have on the floor, she said, but I know you can have a lot of fun in the Oriental rug. I said, thank God you identified. But while we're laying on the floor, I said to Kathy, you know, I'm the only one left, and I would like to have a boy. And if you'll give me a boy, I'll buy you a diamond. So, a little picky laying on the floor, promising a diamond. But the beautiful thing was, Kathy was sick enough, so she believed me. Hospital, waiting for a boy. And I walk into a bank first time in my life. I wanted $200. And you know what they told me? I needed collateral. I didn't know what the hell it was. You know, people in AA talk about everything but collateral. Did you ever speak to me and talk about collateral? I talk about collateral. I went 3 banks and then collateral. So I went to see Paul and I said, Paul, what's collateral? He said, don't worry about it, John, you don't have any. I said, what can I do? He said, you can pray. I said, Christ, Paul, they don't need God, they need collateral. You know? But I went to Hudson, 7 miles, and I met the gentleman. Told him about Kathy and I. He says, you don't lend money with sad stories. But you know, after a while he says, well, how much do you want anyway? And you know, he sounded so good, I said, $400. He gave me $400, and I walked in jewelry store, and I said to Alan, jeweler, became a good friend years later, best the diamond I want. Show me the best diamond. He did. I said, show me the cheapest one. So I bought one for $150, and I brought it to Kathy in the hospital. She calls me up crying, and she said, honey, it's a girl. I said, you got to be kidding. Next Christmas came along, she was in there again. Called me up, she's still crying. Said, honey, it's a girl. Next Christmas came along, and she was in there again. Called me up, still crying. This time, it's been boys. So you work hard enough. God will give you what you want. So 2 Christmases later, Rita came along. 2 years later, Bill. Now I got 2 girls married, 2 in college. One of my twins are in Montreal, talks 4 languages, studies languages, McGill University. Not even much of that. I got a daughter who is in St. Thomas University. One of my twins worked for me the past couple of years. I'm in remodeling business. Got a license too. And we got 16-year-old son at home. And that's my story. And in closing, I just want to repeat. If you ask me what is the most important thing that AA has taught you, I will tell you to be able to enjoy my weekend year. That was what's missing in my life. And to be able to be grateful and proud that I could stand up and share my life. So much of it has to do with so many people who once took time, gave me that help when I didn't even know. I was too sick to know that I needed help. To be able to enjoy your inside bed and to be grateful for your free dinner. And so many thanks, you know, when you kneel down tonight, the list can be so long that you can remember so many places and so many things and so many people. So many things you can thank God for such a good life. Thank God for AA and for our co-founder. He too started off with nobody honored his opinion either. Nobody respected him. He was alone and lonely, scared and lost. But he turned to God. It worked, and he put it in second step, and he said, "For you who I knew, there is a hope. Come to believe that there is a power greater than yourself, and it can restore you." Thank you very much.